I asked Mrs. Winters if I could go to the office and call my father, explaining that my mother was having surgery. I waited for what seemed like an hour in the principal's panel office. Our time is up for today. I hope you will join me next time when we continue with Extraordinary, Ordinary People by Condoleezza Rice. This is Rosemary Scalesa-Fregars, the Georgia Radio Reading Service.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Music and Memories, followed by USA Today at 2. Starting Monday on the Noon Book Hour, Extraordinary, Ordinary People, a memoir of family written and narrated by Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice has excelled as a diplomat, political scientist, and concert pianist. Her achievements run the gamut from helping to oversee the collapse of communism in Europe and the decline of the Soviet Union, to working to protect the country in the aftermath of 9/11, to becoming only the second woman and the first black woman ever to serve as Secretary of State. In the 50s, Birmingham's black middle class largely succeeded in insulating their children from the most corrosive effects of racism. Condoleezza's father, John, a minister and educator, instilled in her a love of sports and politics. Her mother, a teacher, developed Condoleezza's passion for piano and exposed her to the fine arts. From both, Rice learned the value of faith in the face of hardship and the importance of giving back to the community. Extraordinary, Ordinary People, a memoir of family written and narrated by Condoleezza Rice, starting Monday at noon and Tuesday at 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 20 and mostly cloudy. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the low 20s. Then tomorrow clear with a high in the upper 40s. Tomorrow night clear with a low in the low 30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update for Friday, February 12th, 2021. I'm Michael from the Recording Library of West Texas. One note, I will be taking off most of Thursday and all of Friday. So our reports this Thursday and Friday will be pre-recorded reports from the Texas Standard and a few reports from NPR. One thing I do want to note is that as of Thursday morning at 10 a.m., the CVS pharmacies in Texas are now accepting appointments. The website is very busy, so you may have to wait a while. For updates and information, as well as to book an appointment, you can visit cvs.com. You can use the CVS pharmacy app, or you can call CVS at 800-746-7287. Once again, that number is 800-746-7287. Looking at the status of the CVS website insofar as which cities are fully booked and which are available, the good news is most of the cities in West Texas at 10 a.m. on Thursday, February 11th, are still available for booking. That includes Midland, Odessa, Lubbock, Abilene, and San Angelo. We will return with our regular format for this program on Monday. Now, here are our pre-recorded reports.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. We've done a lot of reporting lately on the distribution of COVID-19 vaccines in Texas, and we've heard mostly from officials and journalists across the state about what's working and what's not. But when we took to the Texas Standard Facebook page recently to ask how the process was actually going for listeners, we really saw just how much of a range of experiences there are. Texas Standard's Laura Rice is trying to track some of those experiences in a new project.
We sent a call out for your COVID-19 vaccine stories, and some of you responded.
Hello, my name is Doug Ramey, and I am 60 years old, and I live west of Fort Worth, Texas. I am a frontline healthcare provider. I have been doing this my whole adult life. The first 10 years as an EMS, as an EMT and a paramedic, and then for the last 26 years as a certified registered nurse anesthetist.
That means Ramey is an airway expert, and he knows about the devastation COVID-19 can cause. As a healthcare worker, he should be at the front of the line in Texas, and he says he was.
Through a link, I was able to find the local HEB pharmacy, not very far from our house, and I called them on Christmas Eve and made an appointment for the 26th.
Easy as that. And then for his second vaccine, he got a text to schedule and then a follow-up call for an appointment that same week.
So that process went very well and smoothly, and I'm pleased with how it worked, and I would hope that something similar would be set up for the general population.
But it has not at all been so easy for everyone.
My name is Edwina Baitke. I'm 77 years old. I'm a widow living by myself in San Marcos, Texas. I have high blood pressure, asthma, arthritis. I'm also on a waiting list at my primary care doctor's office, and I've registered at San Marcos Health Department. I check drugstore sites daily on the internet. I also check CVS, Walgreens, HEB, my hospital here in town. I'm frustrated, and I'm worried I won't get vaccinated as soon as possible.
Across the state in El Paso, 40-year-old Jamie Baird has similar concerns.
I have allergic asthma, and I take more than one controller medication, which includes an injectable twice a month. I want the vaccine as I fear that if I were to contract COVID-19, that it would be fatal. I've registered with my county and primary care physician, but the process is just too slow. El Pasoans are hearing that second doses won't be administered until March, while many El Pasoans haven't even received a first dose. My personal skepticism really tells me that for myself and the others in my community, we will not get a first dose until July, given the lack of available vaccines. But I really hope I'm wrong.
In Austin, 67-year-old cancer survivor Tom Phillips also feels this frustration.
And I went to the austintexas.gov login page and signed up and tried to register. And it tells me that there is no vaccines available at this time and won't let me even sign up. And I've done this for several days, and every day, of course, it says there's nothing available and it won't even let me get on a list.
He's considering a workaround.
I was talking to my brother up in Denton, and he said, oh yeah, we can sign up, and then when there's one available, it sends you a text message. So I just went and signed up for the Denton County website. It took me like minutes. It was not confusing at all, and I'm gonna just drive up to Denton to get a shot because the Austin Travis County website is a joke.
He has mixed feelings about the whole process and how it's being handled in different parts of Texas.
I'm pretty frustrated to have to drive 250 miles to get a shot, but I'm going to do that because now I know I'm on a list. I just got a text message on my phone saying I'm on the list. Pretty cool. I'm just trying to get this shot to make sure that I don't get hit hard. We have several people I know have gotten it, and some people's parents have passed away, so I think it is important everybody get vaccinated. Thanks a lot.
We want to keep this project going, but we need your stories to do so. If you're currently eligible to get a COVID-19 vaccine in Texas, how's your experience been? You can record your story directly for the radio by going to texasstandard.org/vaccinatingtexas. I'm Laura Rice for the Texas Standard.
This is the Texas Standard.
Whether it's about the virus or the vaccine, we want to find answers to your questions about COVID-19. Throughout the pandemic, we've been collecting your questions and bouncing them off Dr. Fred Campbell. He's a doctor of internal medicine and an associate professor of medicine at the Long School of Medicine, UT Health San Antonio. Dr. Campbell, welcome back to the Texas Standard, and Happy New Year to you, sir.
Well, Happy New Year to you too, Dave.
The first question that we have for you comes from listener Katie Fisher. She has a question about the vaccine rollout in Texas. Katie asks, will Texas preschool teachers be eligible for the vaccine at the same time as other teachers? What do you know about that?
Well, I know that there is some uncertainty about how states will prioritize their vaccine candidates, but so far, Texas, for instance, seems to be following the CDC recommendations, and their panel has made recommendations that prioritize teachers, school workers, and child care workers. And so it sounds to me as if this listener is likely to be included in that priority group.
I see. Well, now, we've been hearing quite a bit about this new strain of COVID-19 from the UK that's apparently more infectious than the version that we've been dealing with so far here in Texas. And as we've reported here, just last week, the first case of this new strain was found in Harris County. So are there any additional or different precautions you think Texans might need to take in order to stay safe from this new strain of COVID?
Well, you are correct that it appears that the newer strains have mutated and are more infectious, in other words, more likely to spread better and faster. However, that means that the usual good common sense measures, such as social distancing, masking, hand washing, all the things we've been talking about, are going to be even more important to continue. Of course, vaccination is also effective against these strains at the present time. There have been studies to confirm that. So vaccination with our currently available vaccines, again, are an excellent way to minimize spread.
So I guess the message, as I hear you, Doctor, is don't just keep it up, but maybe step it up.
Absolutely. The sooner we get to herd immunity point, the more likely we are to be able to return to something like a normal activity. And the best way to avoid serious complications, of course, is social distancing, masking, and then vaccination.
One of the things about vaccines, and in particular the COVID vaccine, is the great deal of disinformation that has been out there on social media and the internet more generally. And we received a few questions, Doctor, about possible links between the vaccine and infertility. Is there any data that you're aware of to suggest that this COVID vaccine might cause someone to become infertile or perhaps to have complications with pregnancy?
Well, I am not a specialist in obstetrics and gynecology, but having said that, the news seems to be very good about infertility. There has been no evidence of infertility problems. Of course, it may take a considerable period of time to be certain about that.
And more specifically, what about pregnancy, Doctor?
Again, it is very important that women in childbearing years consult their own personal practitioner about the vaccine, but the news so far has been good, and the vaccine has not apparently caused any serious complications in pregnancy.
Best thing to do, though, talk to your personal practitioner about this.
Absolutely.
Dr. Fred Campbell is a doctor of internal medicine at the Long School at UT Health San Antonio, and he's been joining us regularly over the course of this pandemic to answer your questions. Now, if you have something you'd like to ask the doctor about the virus or the vaccine, look for us on Twitter, Facebook, or go over to texasstandard.org/coronavirus, and you'll find a form there to submit your questions. Dr. Campbell, thanks so much for joining us again, and thanks again for your expertise.
Thank you. It's great to be of help.
You're on Texas Standard Time.
Throughout the pandemic, rural communities in the Panhandle have been hit particularly hard by the coronavirus. Early on, they faced limited testing supplies and personal protective equipment. Then, last fall, many hospitals ran out of hospital beds. Now, they can't seem to get vaccines into arms fast enough. Texas Tech Public Media's Jamie Lozano follows one man's journey to a vaccine.
Let me call. Let's see what it'll tell me. Let me see, when was it I called yesterday? I know I called yesterday. I was trying to get in for a second appointment.
Manuel Mendez calls the Lubbock Health Department to check on his second dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. It's still too soon for him to book his next appointment, but he needs to start making calls now.
All first-dose COVID-19 vaccine appointments for the week of January 25th are now full. The city is working with the state of Texas.
Although his age doesn't qualify him for a shot, he's 58, he has diabetes, high blood pressure, and coronary heart disease. which does qualify him.
I'm just trying to protect me and especially Mom. You know, I mean, I live here with her. I'll be moving out in June, Lord willing.
Open heart surgery left him unable to work, so he lives with his mom. His health conditions, combined with his mom's age, she's 80, makes him anxious to get his final vaccination. Also, his mom refuses to get her shot. He hasn't found a place to get vaccinated in Loveland, so he makes calls to Lubbock, the area's medical hub. But that has also been a struggle.
Why they're using Selectacy, I have no idea. I really don't, because it sucks. You try to get in there, and it throws you somewhere else, and it wants you to buy tickets for basketball. Come on, really? So I got lucky, and I just kept calling and calling and calling, and I got in.
Manuel is one of few residents in Loveland to receive a shot. According to state data, as of January 29th, little more than 250 Hockley County residents, which includes Loveland, have been fully vaccinated out of a population of 23,000. And most vaccines, according to health officials, have been administered outside of Loveland, in Lubbock. A few days ago, when he finally landed an appointment, Manuel drove 25 minutes to Lubbock Civic Center, where dozens of people stood in line for a vaccine.
You don't have to stand your ground, you can just go to your left if you have an appointment.
For many, this is their best and really only option.
I think the frustration for the rural areas is that we don't have any idea as to when we'll be allocated vaccine or how much.
Back in Loveland, Bruce White, CEO of Covenant Hospital, says the facility has received 200 doses of the Moderna vaccine, but he doesn't know when another shipment might come in.
You know, we just don't know when we're going to get it. We kind of sit on our hands. There are several rural hospitals that have yet to receive any vaccine. It's hard to really understand the state strategy on how they're rolling it out. You know, I know there's obviously not about enough vaccine to go out all at once, and so it is what it is.
Data from the APM Research Lab ranks Texas as 30th among all states in immunizing its population, with just 5.2% vaccinated as of January 24th. White said there are plans for a mass vaccination event in Loveland if they ever receive enough doses to pull it off.
We have lots and lots of people, you know, calling for the vaccine, and how do we do this, and how do we get signed up, and that kind of thing. And, you know, the answer right now is advocate for yourself. Get the vaccine where you can get it.
That means getting on the phone like your life depends on it. I'm Jamie Lozano in Loveland, Texas.
This is the first story in a year-long collaboration with Frontline, the PBS series, through its local journalism initiative.
33 minutes past the hour, it's Texas Standard Time, and I'm Joy Diaz in for David Brown. The Dell Medical School at UT Austin has been testing out a program that could help combat the health effects of loneliness and isolation, particularly among older people. KUT's Ashley Lopez reports public health officials say loneliness has become a growing public health concern that is more urgent during the pandemic.
Didi Diaz is calling up a man named Earl. He's in his late 70s.
Hello.
Hi, Earl.
Yes.
Hi, Earl. This is Didi.
Yeah, Didi. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Well, doing pretty good.
Didi and Earl haven't talked in a bit, so there's a lot to catch up on. One of Earl's granddaughters recently got married. Another granddaughter had a baby. It came a little early, he says. He also talked about a small medical procedure he had recently. It went well. The conversation then turns to weather. It's getting colder, so the leaves from the trees around his yard are starting to fall. Earl tells Didi about that, too.
I've got an ash tree in front, so I've been dealing with it.
Okay.
And then the neighbor's key. The backyard, the neighbor's trees, they blow in my yard.
This call is like any other conversation you'd hear between friends, except it's a little more one-sided. It's mostly about Earl. It's about what has happened in his life, what he's thinking about, what his days are like, including the most mundane details. Didi started these calls with Earl as a volunteer for the Sunshine Calls program. This program serves older adults who are often homebound and therefore pretty isolated in their daily lives. How often they get a phone call varies depending on the person. And the point of the calls is to get these individuals to just talk about themselves.
The focus is really about making the person on the other end feel that it is a time of their own, that it is a time of their priorities, their choices, their interests.
That's Minnie Callon. She's the executive director of Factor Health at Dell Medical School, which is a lead in this project. She says the program uses empathy as a sort of medical intervention for people facing loneliness and isolation. Callon says these simple conversations can eventually, hopefully, have a big effect on how people feel about their own lives.
And in that way, make them feel, for that moment, and hopefully it carries forward, that their past matters, their present matters, and what they feel about the future matters.
This project is a partnership between Dell Med and Meals on Wheels of Central Texas. Meals on Wheels is a national group that distributes meals to older Americans. Adam Hauser is the president and CEO of Central Texas's chapter. He says isolation has been an issue among the people they serve for a long time.
It's not uncommon for many of our clients, if they didn't have a daily visit from Meals on Wheels volunteer, they wouldn't see anyone else.
Hauser says isolation and the depression and anxiety that can be caused by isolation has been a public health concern for a while now. But he says the pandemic has been like sort of an x-ray on this problem. Hauser says everyone can just see it a little clearer now.
I guess you could say this is one of the sort of good things to come out of the pandemic, is that people are starting to realize that older adults have very complex and significant needs.
And Minnie Callon with Dell Med says these needs have become greater and more urgent during the pandemic. So far, the program has already served more than 100 people.
There's absolutely no question that with COVID and the increased isolation of folks, the interest in loneliness has ratcheted up. No question about it.
Callon says that's why Dell Med also began conducting a study on the program. Researchers checked in with people between July and September of last year. They measured whether these sunshine calls had made them feel less isolated, less left out, and like they had companionship in their life. Callon says if they can prove these calls made measurable differences, it could be a useful tool in the fight against isolation.
It's one of several potential solutions that will then be available to folks as they think about how to intervene, not just screen for and recognize that the issue exists.
Adam Hauser with Meals on Wheels says it's more important than ever for people to tackle this problem as a major public health issue. He says isolation can affect someone's physical health as well as their emotional health.
Loneliness and depression and feelings of isolation, in our view, are viruses just like COVID, and can have just as devastating health impacts, particularly on seniors and older adults.
Dell Med researchers are currently working to get the results of their study published as soon as possible so the program can be replicated elsewhere.
In Austin, I'm Ashley Lopez. You're on Texas Standard Time.
For some COVID-19 patients, a negative test does not mean they're done with the virus. It's called long-haul COVID, when symptoms like chronic fatigue, respiratory problems, and brain fog can persist for months after contracting the virus. Although doctors know more about long-haul COVID than when the pandemic started, there are still many questions about its effects. For more, we turn to Dr. Esther Malamed. She is an assistant neurology professor at UT Austin's Dell Medical School. Dr. Malamed, thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We spoke last fall about these folks who experience symptoms from COVID-19 months after they first contract the virus. Do you have a better idea now about how prevalent this is?
So, David, there have been studies looking at patients at a couple of weeks, at 3 months, and now the most recent study has looked at patients at 6 months post-COVID. And it appears that this is still very much of a prevalent condition, even going out to 6 months for folks. Mm. And the main symptoms that are experienced include fatigue and headaches, pain. There are persistent neuropsychological symptoms. And we are still learning about this syndrome, but it certainly does appear that even out to 6 months at this point, folks are still experiencing symptoms.
And what separates those whose symptoms persist for so long versus everyone else, or those who seem to get over it in pretty short order?
It's a very interesting question, David. So comorbidities such as obesity and high blood pressure, diabetes, or mental health all seem to predispose patients to a higher risk of getting COVID, as well as to ongoing long-term symptoms. However, it is interesting that even patients who were asymptomatic or had mild disease during the acute COVID infection still continue to have these long-term post-COVID symptoms. And so it is not just the patients who were in the ICU and who had multi-organ damage to the heart, lungs, and the brain that can determine long-lasting symptoms. There's definitely something that we're still not completely understanding in terms of what other effects there may be on the body by the virus in those who may have had mild or even asymptomatic disease.
Well, we've been hearing so much of late about mutations of this virus. Is it possible there could be a particular strain to blame or something else entirely?
That's also a really good question, and with every new finding, there are 10 new questions that are raised, and
right.
Now that we have learned, we're learning about the different strains of the virus in Great Britain and in several states in the United States and several emerging in other countries, it is certainly the case that some of the strains may predispose to different symptoms. The other possibility that my research team in collaboration with other immunologists and physicians at Dell Medical School are studying is whether there is an emergence of autoimmune diseases post-COVID, and perhaps that may be one of the factors that could explain why people with mild or asymptomatic COVID may continue to experience symptoms post-COVID.
Do there seem to be any distinctions between groups of people when it comes to long-term effects of COVID?
Yes, so we're learning that men are predisposed to getting a more severe disease, but interestingly, women seem to be outnumbering men at a ratio of 4-1 in terms of presenting for long-term COVID symptoms. And it's unclear whether this is a true genetic difference or environmental difference, or it may be that women are seeking care more often than men are. Another question that we will, I'm sure, continue to learn about as we investigate post-COVID syndrome in the coming months.
Obviously, we're going to continue to keep an eye on that research at the Dell Medical School, UT Austin. That's where Dr. Esther Melamed is an assistant neurology professor. Dr. Melamed, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. Time now to turn to your questions about COVID-19. We've been asking you to send in whatever inquiries you might have about the pandemic or the vaccine, and we're going to get some answers from Dr. Fred Campbell. He's a doctor of internal medicine and associate professor of medicine at the Long School of Medicine, UT Health San Antonio. Dr. Campbell, welcome back to the Texas Standard. Good to have you, sir.
It's great to be back, David.
All right, so this first question comes to us on Twitter from user Sam. Sam asks, I haven't had a primary care doctor in years. Since the vaccine is a two-part jab, will it be available at pharmacies like the flu shot, or will folks need to have a primary care physician to get the vaccine?
Well, Sam is correct that historically flu shots and other vaccinations have been administered in pharmacies under the authorization of that company's medical director without necessarily a medical home. So he should be able to do that under the COVID-19 as well.
You do have to, as I understand it, you do have to go back in for a second shot and make sure it's the Pfizer vaccine, not some other brand, right?
That is correct, and that might be a very difficult record-keeping process, so I can't tell you with certainty how that's going to be maintained.
This next question is from an anonymous listener who asks, I've heard the Pfizer shot is particularly painful because it has to be administered at such a low temperature. Are you aware that that's the case, Doctor? I believe I've heard that the vaccine has to be held at something like negative 70 degrees Celsius.
Well, the vaccine itself is always thawed to a liquid form before administration, so it will be above the freezing point. So the temperature at the time of the vaccination is probably not going to affect any pain or other problems at the site.
I see. Well, that is probably comforting for a lot of folks to know, people who think that it might be injected at a super cold temperature. That's not the case, it sounds like. Another question related to the temperature of that Pfizer vaccine. This one from Thomas Nugent, who asks, should we have more faith in the Moderna vaccine becoming more popular since it doesn't have to be stored at such a low temperature like the Pfizer vaccine? I mean, could that low temperature requirement affect efficacy and distribution as you see it, Dr. Campbell?
Well, I'm confident that our distribution system is going to deliver any vaccine to fairly remote areas without much problem. I understand that these vaccines can maintain their potency under refrigeration for several hours. So although it might be very difficult to have people that are very remote vaccinated, I know that that's feasible with these vaccines.
I was trying to think of another situation in the U.S., at least in recent memory, that might be a parallel when it comes to ramping up for the mass inoculation of Americans. I was thinking maybe polio, perhaps the polio vaccine back in the 1950s. Can you imagine any parallel? Just how big of a logistical issue is this going to be moving into January of 2021?
Well, I am old enough that I actually helped participate in the vaccine project with polio. I was a Boy Scout back in the
wow.
60s when we were giving out sugar cubes with the Sabin oral vaccine. So it was a project that involved people coming into schoolhouses, to churches, to other places, and lining up for long periods of time to get their vaccination in oral form. So that was my first experience with a big vaccine campaign, and of course it has virtually wiped out polio in the world at this point. We're getting very close.
Dr. Campbell, one other quick question. I was thinking about the timeline here. It was about March, I recall, when the nation began to go on lockdown. Tell me, come March 2021, where do you think we're going to be with this vaccine and the pandemic at large in Texas?
Well, there will be hundreds of thousands of people safer in some respects because of being vaccinated by that time, particularly our highest risk individuals, the elderly and infirmed who are institutionalized, and of course our frontline workers. I don't think that March is likely to be safe for most of the population, however, that have not been vaccinated and would still need to do all of the common sense things we've been talked about, including social distancing and wearing of masks, until much later in 2021.
Dr. Fred Campbell is a doctor of internal medicine at the Long School at UT Health San Antonio. He's been joining us regularly over the course of the pandemic to answer your questions. Now, if you have something you'd like to ask the doctor about virus or the vaccine, look for us on Twitter, Facebook, or go over to texasstandard.org/coronavirus. You'll find a form there to submit your questions. Dr. Campbell, thanks so much for joining us again. Good to talk with you, sir.
It's always great to be of help.
And this has been your coronavirus update for Friday, February 12th, 2021. Stay tuned for the magazine Entertainment Weekly, followed by national news with USA Today at 2, and our local news broadcast with our papers in Odessa and Midland at 3. And then more news from the Wall Street Journal at 6. Finally, tonight at 7, as always on Fridays, we bring you some lighter news and funny readings from On the Lighter Side. That's tonight at 7. Thank you again for joining us, and have a great weekend. We will be back with our regular program. We will be back with our regular program at 1 o'clock Monday afternoon.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 21 and mostly cloudy. Tonight, it will be cloudy with a low in the low 20s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 40s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome.
Welcome. This is Healthy Life, and I'm your reader, Tony Ray, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Health, and I'll start with an article called Optimize Your Home Health Toolkit. We've gone from not even knowing what a pulse oximeter or a UV light sanitizer is to Googling the best prices. What other products and meds do you need or not in your 2021 health toolkit? Take this quiz and see if your knowledge or what you're using needs an update. Do you know your meds? Here's your first one. Uh-oh, the thermometer says you're in fever turf. Better reach for A, Tylenol, B, Advil or Motrin, C, nothing. The fever needs to run its course. I'll let you think. A, Tylenol. A fever's job is to make your body inhospitable to the germs invading it, but you don't need to let a temperature run rampant. Studies have shown that a fever reducer won't delay recovery, but can reduce misery. Acetaminophen edges out ibuprofen, says Crystal Zhao, pharmacy. D, a assistant clinical professor of pharmacy at the University of California, San Francisco, who says it's safer to take. If your fever tops 103, call a doc. Next question. You need your cough, hack, cough, repeat to stop, like right now. A, cough suppressant. B, expectorant. Or C, antibiotics. The answer is B, an expectorant. An expectorant loosens up the phlegm so it's easier to cough up, says Zell. Look for products with guaifenesin, such as Mucinex SE. Suppressants, such remove the itch that makes you want to cough. And together, these ingredients work against each other, says Zhao. So you'll want to skip the combo products such as Robitussin Honey Cough plus Chest Congestant DM. And don't be tempted by antibiotics. They don't kill viruses, which cause colds and COVID-19. Number three, which is better for a runny nose? A, nose drops. B, decongestants you take by mouth. The answer is B, decongestants you take by mouth. Oral decongestants effectively constrict the blood vessels in your nose, relieving the runniness and also stuffiness. Nose drops, aka nasal sprays, do that too, but can cause rebound congestion if you use them for more than 3 days in a row, sometimes making your nose feel stuffier than before. The spray, stuffiness, spray routine can become a vicious cycle that's hard to break. Nose drops made of just saline, such as Ocean, won't do that, but they don't work for everybody. Number four, you did legs for the first time in months. Ouch, and ibuprofen might, and then you're going to pick which one, choose which apply, let you walk comfortably, B, reduce your gains, C, take down your risk of injury. Well, the answer is A and B. Let you walk comfortably and reduce your gains. If you're sore after one workout and take an Advil, it's fine and can potentially help your muscles be less sore, says Brad Schoffenfield, PhD, CSCS at the Lehman College. But hitting repeat on anti-inflammatory pills, also naproxen and aspirin, too often can stop you from heaping and reaping strength gains. The acute inflammatory response that happens after training signals your body to repair and strengthens the muscle. Chronically using these meds blunts that. Okay, well, let's check your germ IQ. Here's the fifth question. The absolute best microbiologist-approved way to clean your hands is with A, soap, B, hand sanitizer, and C, both. The answer is both. If you wash your hands for 20 seconds with regular soap, that's all you need. Thing is, nobody really does that, not even now. Most people only wash their hands for about 11 seconds. That's why it's better to wash your hands and follow it up with some hand sanitizer that's at least 70% alcohol, just to be safe. Products with less alcohol may not kill all the germs. Okay, here's the sixth one. The best way to get the germs on your doorknob from infecting you is with A, home UV sanitizing wand, B, any basic cleaning product, and C, an antibacterial or disinfecting cleaning product. And the answer is C. I bet you got that. While UV light works well for hospital disinfection, home UV wands aren't as effective, nor are they typically regulated. And regular spray cleaner doesn't do anything to viruses or bacteria. Products with the words antibacterial or disinfecting will actually kill them. But for these products to really work, you have to leave them on the surface for about 10 minutes, which you, as a busy person, do not really have time for. You can use antibacterial wipes and let the residue dry on its own. Number 7, assess your health, monitor IQ. If your wearables show a heart rate that's higher than usual in the morning, it might mean, okay, choose the ones that apply. You're having a heart attack, A, B, you're about to get sick, or C, you should kick your workout back today. The answer is B and C. You're about to get sick and you should kick your workout back today. The stress of a hard workout or fighting off illness may cause your heart rate to go up. And fevers may increase heart rate up to 20 beats per minute for every degree of temperature above normal. A heart attack wouldn't be likely to show up on a heart rate monitor. If you suspect you're having one, you need to be diagnosed and see a doctor, not a smartwatch. Number 8. Your blood pressure is all over the place because you checked it. Okay, which ones apply? A, after working out. B, after drinking coffee. C, with your arm on a low surface. And D, scrolling Twitter. The answer is all of them. A lot of factors can contribute to blood pressure going up and down, and doing just one thing wrong can affect readings. To avoid mistakes above that I just mentioned and get a better read, wait 30 minutes after a workout or coffee. Sit still with your arm at your heart height and back supported, feet flat on the floor, and take a break from stressful strolling. Number 9, you should be monitoring your blood oxygen saturation on a pulse oximeter daily, A, B, if you're having COVID-19 symptoms, and C, never. And guess what? The answer is never, number C. When news came out that some people with COVID-19 had low oxygen saturation levels, even if they didn't have a hard time breathing, there was a run on pulse oximeters. But oxygen stats aren't magic numbers. Some people with low levels are pretty healthy, while others need hospitalization. And sometimes a dip is due to how you're wearing the device. A better way to know if you need a hospital, go if you're having trouble breathing and don't wait. So here's the bonus round, true or false. After exposure to someone with COVID-19, gargling with hydrogen peroxide or putting hand sanitizer under your nose can help you avoid getting sick. True or false? It's false. You have to be preventative with COVID-19 rather than reactive. A 1% hydrogen peroxide gargle can help reduce viral burden in the mouth, making dental work safer for dentists, but it won't help you after you've been exposed. And applying hand sanitizer under your nose may just put more germs on your face. Well, now we're going to hear from Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert. And this is how he keeps his immune system in shape. When the number of COVID-19 cases exploded last year, so did the number of products and services promising to bolster your immunity. You shouldn't get away from talk of IV vitamin infusions, mushroom extracts, and drinkable immune-boosting shots. You also couldn't get away from Dr. Fauci, who became a household name after four decades of trying to make sure Americans don't get sick. Ever the straight shooter, he explains that you can't buy a good immune system. If you don't smoke and only drink in moderation, you get a good night's sleep, you have a healthy diet, you exercise, and you do something to reduce stress, that's going to keep your immune system healthy. Not any of these dietary supplements and herbs and other things. How he takes his own advice. Do what you have to do, then de-stress. I can't alleviate stress during the day because my day is one big stress period from morning to evening, Dr. Fauci says. So when I get home in the evening, I do a power walk for about 3.5 to 4 miles, and that generally decompresses my stress. The other day, I was walking along Massachusetts Ave, and son of a gun, I saw a fox run out of somebody's yard into the woods. Know the exception to the vitamins won't help refrain. When Dr. Fauci mentioned in September that he takes vitamin D and that low levels of the vitamin affect your susceptibility to infection, people heard, "I take D," as you should take D. Now, how it goes, if you are deficient in D, then taking vitamin D supplements is important. If you have normal levels, it doesn't make any difference, he says, but a doc can check your level via a blood test. Start with a good breakfast. While no specific foods boost your immunity, Dr. Fauci says, an overall balanced diet can help you stay healthy. He aims for balance, but sometimes errs in the timing. He can forget to eat dinner unless his wife reminds him, so he gets the day off to a good start with a pretty consistent healthy breakfast, usually pomegranate juice and an egg white on an English muffin. Lunch is light. Busy nights can mean a takeout salad or a salmon burger. Sleep, or at least a nap. We're going to give the doc a bit of a pass on his own advice here, since his sleep took a hit to lower the disease hit for the rest of us. When COVID-19 spiked, I was getting a ridiculous amount of sleep, like 3 to 4 hours a night. Now I get anywhere between 5 and 6, which is not bad, he says, but it's not optimal. On the occasion he has a half hour between appointments, I'll lie on my couch in my office and take a power nap. Keep COVID-19 away. Dr. Fauci wears a mask, washes his hands all the time, and compulsively sanitizes them. If you're getting tired of being cautious, you have to realize the seriousness of the situation. At press time, the U.S. had more than 250,000 deaths, and the end is not in sight. That's enough incentive to be diligent, I think. But he knows it's hard. Don't be discouraged. I think you should realize that it will end. Hang in there, says Dr. Fauci. Give more, live more. This is change for the better thinking. Doing good can make you feel great. It's also great for your health, and there are lots of ways to give without opening your wallet. Some call it the helper's high, others warm glow giving. Whatever name you attach to the sensation, a growing body of evidence indicates that doing good for others can actually make you feel better, and that's just the start of how your perspective may begin to change. The helper's high is linked to a flood of mood-enhancing chemicals released in your brain during the act of kindness. While the novelty of simple pleasures like food and sex is shown to wear off quickly, this rush seems to be endlessly on tap. There's even evidence that altruistic behavior may boost your tolerance of minor and chronic pains. Perhaps that's because we're hardwired to recognize that community building is one of the cornerstones of modern civilization. Donating your time, experience, or even cold hard cash can bring joy to others, be a release, build bonds with more people, and, especially as you see the change in others' lives, fill your own life with a broader purpose. It is a happiness that lasts, partly because it's creating meaning in your own life, says Emma Sepla, PhD, a director at Stanford University Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education. Over time, that may result in health gains too. Researchers in the UK found that people who volunteered at least once a month reported better mental health than those who gave less. And a recent Harvard study shows that adults over 50 who volunteered at least 100 hours per week, that's less than 2 hours each week, had a reduced risk of mortality, greater physical activity, and fewer depressive symptoms compared with their peers. Even if you're short on money, time, or attention, there are still plenty of ways to pay it forward in 2021. Here are a few people that are making a difference. Give Skills. Armin Henderson, MD, 35, physician, homeless advocate in Miami, Florida. Everybody says they go into medicine to help people. I'm in the hospital 7 nights a week, and then I have 7 days off, but outside the hospital is where I feel like a doctor the most. We have a disease relief coalition made up of several nonprofits, including the one I started in 2018 called Dade County Street Response. Miami goes through a crisis every year with hurricane season, and the government does not respond well to vulnerable communities like our unsheltered population. When the pandemic hit, we started giving out tents, food, and toiletries. We were treating wounds and doing COVID-19 tests. We set up a full-service bathroom site so people could use the toilet and take a shower. These are the life extenders, sometimes on the order of 15 years if people have access. I think I suffer from a mild case of depression. Doing the work that I do in my community is like therapy. This is a way to get physicians into the community where I think things really matter. So if you want to take action with this, reach out to a volunteer network like taprootfoundation.org or catchafire.org. They match your skills to nonprofits that need help in everything from finance and web design to marketing and strategy. Okay, how about giving some time? Jose Centero, 46, Los Angeles, California, is a chef and restaurateur and free meal maker. A week into the pandemic, we decided to close all the restaurants and furlough or lay off employees so they could get a jump start with unemployment before the bad stuff happened. Despite my being distraught about everything that was happening, my friend introduced me to Lola Gulandini, who co-founded a nonprofit called Dine 11 with her close friend Chris Say. They began by donating meals to hospitals all over LA, especially to those with less funding. So for over 2 months, I would cook 2 or 3 days a week, providing more than 1,000 meals. Being able to do this gave me purpose, and I was glad I was able to help in any small way that I could. So I found prepping and cooking in solitude calming for me in very uncertain times. Sometimes that's lacking a lot right now. But what is lacking now is common decency. Just trying to take care of people in any way that you can. How to take action? Local food banks and soup kitchens often need support, especially now. VolunteerMatch.org lets you search by city or even zip code for groups seeking the different kinds of assistance. There are various ways to help virtually and in person. Want to give some energy? Joe Houston, Jr., 27, Washington, D.C., is a fitness coach and community advocate. My mother died when I was 13, and I always say the street life was my father. I was incarcerated on a gun charge, and during my sentence, I got involved in fitness and working out. When I came home at 21 years old, I knew my purpose, to empower people through wellness. COVID-19 hit. My neighborhood, Ward 8, didn't have the most cases in D.C., but we had the most deaths. There's only one grocery store and no gym. So in June, I started #WeFitDC, an initiative that aims to close the health and wellness gap in our district. I give free workout sessions to the community, and we have food drives with only nutritional options. Want to take action? Start a walking, running, or exercise group that's inclusive. Pay for a trainer or earn your own qualifications via the National Academy of Sports Medicines or the National Strength and Conditioning Associations. Want to give some guidance? Gerald Oda, 52, of Honolulu, Hawaii. He's an insurance investigator and a Little League coach. My older brother started coaching Little League after he graduated from the University of Hawaii, where he also played baseball. He asked if I wanted to join him, and I've been coaching now for more than 25 years. My team won the 2018 Little League World Series. I work from home, so that gives me flexibility. Practices are up to 2.5 hours long, 3 to 4 times a week, and it gives me something to look forward to. Want to take action? Coaching your kids' team is the gateway, but also check with your local rec department for opportunities. And the last one is give service. Jason Irby, 21, pro motorcycle racer, electrician, volunteer fireman, lives in Napa, California. In 2017, the Tubbs Fire in Northern California was less than 5 miles away from where I call home. I wanted to help, but I couldn't. So I became a volunteer firefighter with the Napa County Fire Department. With motorcycle racing, I'm thankful I've had success, but it's always been about me. But with firefighting, it's a complete opposite. The team environment and being able to support a community that I've grown up in is really what attracts me. The 2020 Glass Fire started 1/4 mile from our fire station, and being able to drive up and down the road and see the buildings we did save made me really happy. Want to take action? Local fire departments help you find where you can get trained, and the American Red Cross organizes disaster response teams in times of need. And yup, you can give money. There are plenty of charities in the Fort Wayne and Allen County area that would like to have a little extra funding. Well, I'm going to share a couple quotes. You cannot have a positive life and a negative mind. Joyce Meyer. And Alicia Scalarene says, eating is not merely a material pleasure. Eating well gives a spectacular joy to life and contributes immensely to goodwill and happy companionship. It is of great importance to morale. Gro Harlem Brundtland said, health is the core of human development. And Marlene Dietrich said, it's the friends you can call up at 4 a.m. that matter. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Tony Ray with Healthy Life. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. Booster vaccines begin February 15th at Urgent Cares. OANews at OAOA.com. While the COVID-19 vaccine first doses will still be available at Ratliff Stadium this Wednesday and Thursday, MCH officials say the booster or second shot will be administered starting Monday at urgent care clinics by appointment only. The second shot is for those who received the first shot at Ratliff Stadium during the last few weeks. Medical Center Health System has created a process for the community to receive their booster, second doses, shots of the Pfizer vaccines given at Ratliff Stadium, a news release details. The first booster shots will be available starting on Monday for those who received the first shot at Ratliff Stadium. Odessans can call 432-640-2747. That's 432-640-2747. That number is answered Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., which are also the same times to get the second shot at the urgent cares located at either 6030 West University Boulevard or 3001 JBS Parkway.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring